You pegged it right when you said they had no honor. All that talk back at that no-name town was just that, talk. They knew all along they were back in the slaving business. You heard what the marshal said about there being only a dozen of them, but they bought supplies enough for 100 men and wagons and mules.
Yes, and as they use up the supplies, they'll fill the space with stolen children, girls. But they're not going to find many girls in this area, brother.
No, I think that going to Yuma business was a lot of crap.
Sam held up a hand.
Maybe not. Maybe they do plan on going to Yuma, pretending to be hauling freight, and then cutting across into California, staying close to the Mexican border, raiding small farms and ranches as they go. How far is the ocean?
Your guess is as good as mine, brother.
Barkeep, how far to the ocean from here?
Oh, about 150 miles, I reckon. I ain't never been there, personal.
Do we check out Yuma?
We'll leave in the morning.
As they pulled out before dawn, both were thinking that if Yuma was any worse than Ehrenberg, it was a hellhole. They were leaving behind a town where all water had to be hauled from the muddy Colorado, where 4 to 5 inches of dust lay in the streets, and where flies and other insects swarmed everywhere, biting and stinging and covering food almost as soon as it hit the table. They followed the river south, and at a tiny four-building town about 25 miles south of Ehrenberg, they found their suspicions about their quarry to be reality.
I sure did see them wagons. It was an odd sight, too.
Why?
All them sleeping kids. Well, I say all of them. About half a dozen of them in one wagon. I expect the other wagons had kids in them, too.
Sleeping? All of them?
Every last one of them. All girls, too. I don't think I was supposed to see them, either. Made one of them hard-looking hombres mad. Then he kind of forced a grin and said they was toting them kids to an orphanage as soon as they dumped the supplies in Yuma. I didn't think no more about it till you fellas asked.
Did they buy anything in town?
Let me think. Yeah, they did. They bought all the laudanum Riley had over at the general store. Excuse me, gentlemen.
Bastards. They're keeping those girls drugged during the day and probably covered with a tarp so they can't be seen.
But where did they get them?
They probably had them all along. All the time they were making that noble speech to us. Probably been stealing them as they rode west.
Well, there are the wheel marks. We were right in thinking we were following the right tracks.
And now?
We know the girls are all right. Unhappy and scared, but unhurt. We go bursting up in there, and some of them are sure to get hurt in the gunfire. Let's wait and see what they do next.
They followed the tracks south, staying well back as the wagon train followed the meandering route of the Colorado. Both felt the wagons would not enter Yuma, and several days later, their theory proved to be correct. About 10 miles north of the town, the wagons pulled over and the men made camp. The two had to lay back for cover, but using field glasses, they could see through the distance as the outlaw size was strengthened by the arrival of a dozen riders coming up from the south, and they brought with them another group of girls. Even from their distant vantage point, both men could see that the girls appeared drugged by the way they moved.
Now what?
Circle around and find the law in Yuma?
We can bet they've got papers of some sort. After what we did to them on the border, they'll be doubly cautious.
And they'll probably have men in town watching the sheriff's office.
Right. So that leaves...
us.
The wagons remained in place for another day. On the second day, they were joined by other wagons and more outriders, bringing the force to about 50 men and 20 wagons.
Figure 3 or 4 girls to a wagon, and that comes out to between 60 and 80 girls.
Sam pointed to the south. 4 riders were approaching the encampment. Lifting the field glasses, he picked out the badges pinned to the shirts of the riders.
Lawmen.
Now we'll see how well they prepared.
Sam handed the glasses to Bodine, who watched as papers were presented to the lawmen, the papers inspected, the tarps pulled back, and the girls looked at.
Probably telling the deputies that it's easier on the girls to keep them sleepy. Orphans aren't given much of a break in your society.
Bodine could not argue the point. Apparently satisfied that everything was on the up and up, the lawmen shook hands and rode away, back toward the south.
D- Did you see any money change hands?
No. I don't think they're trying to buy anyone off. Those papers they've got are doing the trick. They finally got smart and had some documents forged. Brother, I've got a feeling that we're looking at one tree in a big forest, if you know what I mean.
Yes. I've been thinking about that. Say they're getting $1,000 a head for the girls. And say there are 75 girls down there. That $75,000 split among 50 or 60 men. It wouldn't be worth their while. So I would have to conclude that there are more girls either on the way or being held prisoner close to the sea.
I picked the latter.
Yes, that would be the logical choice. You're improving, Bodine. No telling what other strides you might make over the years.
Bodine headed south that day, riding for the Mexican border, leaving Sam to watch and to follow if the wagon train pulled out. He'd catch up with them if that was the case. He did not stop in Yuma, instead riding for the border as hard as he dared push his horse. It was a hard ride for both rider and horse. At the border, he found a cantina and relaxed over strong Mexican beer.
Is anyone here acquainted with the Comandante Luis de Carrillo?
He is a very honorable man. Why do you ask?
Matt told them about Porter and Lake and how he and Sam and Wellman and Laurie had rescued the children from the old fort. Then Matt told them about the wagon train north of the border.
How can we help?
Do you think you could find Comandante Carrillo?
Si. The Comandante and his men are in this part of Sonora now, helping to rid the country of outlaws and pistoleros. The Comandante is no more than a day's ride away.
Matt pulled out pen and paper and wrote out what was taking place and where he felt the wagon train was heading. He requested that the Comandante and his men pace the wagon train on the Mexican side of the border, while he, Bodine, would ride back to where he had last seen the wagons and rejoin Sam. A slim vaquero folded the paper and put it in a pouch.
I will find the Comandante, Matt Bodine. God go with you and your brother on your journey to save those poor children.
Matt traded horses in the town, getting a fine, heavily muscled steel dust gelding that was built for traveling the rough country and was chomping at the bit, ready to go. Diablo was the animal's name.
He likes you.
How can you tell?
Because you would not have been able to get close to him if he didn't. He is better than a dog at keeping watch while you rest. He will kill any person who approaches you. Vaya con Dios, Matt Bodine.
Sam had left Indian sign for Bodine, showing him when the wagons had pulled out and in what direction. They had crossed the river and headed into California. They had been gone for 3 days. Bodine figured he could overtake them in a day and a half, for the wagons would be traveling at a much slower pace than a mounted rider. He rode through a land virtually without water, following the tracks of the wagons and the hoofprints of Sam's horses, which he knew well. The first couple of days out were the roughest, traveling on the southern edge of the Imperial Desert and cutting south toward the Mexican border. At the southernmost tip of East Mesa, Bodine caught up with Sam just at dusk.
Any changes?
None. But they know where the border is and they're staying close to it. You find Comandante Carrillo.
I sent him word. He shouldn't be far behind us. Asked him to stay on his side of the border, and when the time comes, we'll push the wagon train into his territory.
Sam arched one eyebrow.
There are two of us and about 60 of them. How do you propose we do that?
I don't have the vaguest idea, brother.
Since following the wagons was a slow and tedious task, Sam had been stopping often along the way, making conversation with anyone who would talk to him, and had something of value to share.
There are water holes other than those known by Porter and Lake. And there are little towns all along the route. Towns that the slavers will not enter for fear of being exposed. But we can.
Indians?
Many tribes, but not many Indians. Cuyupipe, Manzanita, La Pastas, half a dozen other tribes. They present little danger now.
Back at the cantina, they told me about a town right on the border. Nobody really knows which side of the border it's on. Comandante Carrillo is supposed to meet us there, if at all possible.
Does it have a name?
I don't think so. It's just a town. We ought to come up on it tomorrow.
Bodine spotted the Comandante and a few of his men sitting on benches in front of the cantina. They were all dressed in civilian clothes. After a nod from the Comandante, Bodine and Sam tied up at the hitch rail and followed the man into the coolness of the cantina. Carrillo's men remained outside to keep watch.
I have put people in place on your side of the border, all the way to the Gulf of Santa Catalina. I suspect the plans are that Captain Morgan will lay offshore and the girls will be taken to the ship by longboat.
How many men do you have, Luis?
60. They are all seasoned fighters.
Can we expect any help from the army on our side of the line?
That I cannot say for sure. But I must warn you that my first thoughts would be no. Emphatically so. I have had people busy with the telegrafo on both sides of the border, and the news they received is that the papers of Porter and Lake are proper, legal, and in order. It seems that Lake owns a judge, so to speak, and the judge drew up these papers. And there is this to consider. At the present time, relations between our countries are somewhat strained. I would think that if anything is to be done, we alone will have to do it.
I hate politicians.
They are the same worldwide, I think. They are, what did the Norte Americanos call it? Yes, a necessary evil.
And of course, you and your men are not allowed to cross the border, right, Comandante?
Oh, heavens, no. We would never do that. Any more than your soldiers cross our border searching for Apaches and Comancheros.
Well, then, we'll just have to make sure the wagons somehow get into Mexico.
Only the two of you? I would be most interested in hearing your plan.
He doesn't have one, and neither do I. We'll just charge headlong into the fray and do our best to tilt the windmill south, so to speak.
The Comandante studied Sam for a quiet moment.
You speak as quite an educated man, Sam. Yet, like Bodine, you have the reputation of a gunfighter. I find that most interesting. We must sit and talk at length someday, discussing things of a philosophical nature. I think the talks would be most enlightening.
For whom?
That is a good question.
Comandante Carrillo stayed south of the border, while Matt and Sam returned to the American side, tracking the westward progress of the slave wagons. Carrillo and his men paced the wagons, never staying more than 5 miles away from the border. Luis had given Bodine a map of Southern California, and Matt had studied it carefully.
The stagecoach road veers north at Tecate. I can't believe they'll take that route. I'm going to take a chance, Sam, and go on ahead. I think they have a route already checked out, running right along the border, about halfway between Tecate and Tijuana. I'm going to throw up a detour and see if I can force the wagons across the border or close enough so that it won't matter to Luis and his men. I don't know how I'm going to do it. I'll just have to play it by ear.
Be careful, brother.
That's my middle name.
Sam rolled his eyes heavenward. Bodine cut south, crossing the border and linking up with Comandante Carrillo. He told Luis of his plan.
It might work. I will send two of my men with you. Benito has traveled extensively in this part of the country and thinks he knows what route the scum are taking. Bosco is a crack shot. They are both good men to have at one side. Go with God, my friends, and remember that the lives of many innocent children are in our hands.
Around the small fire that night, just north of the border, Benito drew a map in the sand.
They will have to water here, for there is nothing between there and Tijuana. At least not enough to sustain as many people and animals as they have. They will have to fill many barrels of water at that spot, and doing that will certainly cut down the travel time of each day. I am absolutely certain they are taking this old road that runs along the border. It is passable for wagons, but just barely. And it is there I believe we can make them cut south into Mexico. We will have to work very hard and very quickly to block this route, and then cleverly disguise what we have done to make it appear it was nature's work and not the work of men.
Will doing this put them into Mexico?
Benito flashed a dazzling smile, but his eyes were killing cold.
Close enough. We won't quibble over a few miles.
Comandante Carrillo and his men spread out and made camp within gunshot sound of the wash, while Bodine and the two Mexican soldiers worked feverishly to throw up a natural-looking blockade of the narrow, twisting old road. Carrillo had sent one of his men riding to intercept Sam and bring him to the ambush site. Sam rode into the Comandante's main camp, quickly ate a hot meal, then rode north to join his blood brother. The slave wagons stopped and made camp less than 5 miles from the ambush site.
Two men rode into camp last night. They didn't stay long. One of them was Porter.
And it would be a safe bet that the other was Lake.
Yes, when they left, they headed towards the stagecoach road that runs between Tecate and San Diego.
Bodine had hoped the elusive pair of outlaw slavers would stay with the wagons and be caught up in the killing fire of the ambush.
It'll never end until we put those two out of business.
That is truth.
Is this going to be our destiny? Chasing after those two scum?
It would appear to be. Either those two are exceptionally clever or they are the world's greatest cowards.
Vasco looked across the coals of the dying fire.
There is nothing so dangerous as a coward one has pushed into a corner. As a boy, I fought another boy in my village. I whipped him and he ran. I made the big mistake of chasing after him, and an even worse mistake of catching him. That was one of the worst beatings I ever received. The boy changed before my eyes, fighting with the ferocity of a mountain lion. I learned a valuable lesson that day.
Lake is no coward. I do not know this other person, but I have heard of Lake. He is a, how do you say it? A mercenario. A soldier for hire. I think this Lake person is a very dangerous man. Not one to be taken lightly.
Like the Apache. And no one with any sense would call the Apache cowards.
Is there anything else you know about him? Either of you?
Both Mexican soldiers shrugged.
I've heard that Lake is not his real name. I've also heard that he is a very educated man, and that he was a gunfighter in Texas before going overseas. How much of what I heard is true, I cannot say.
That is what I have heard, too. And that he can change how he looks. But any man who steals children to sell into prostitution is filth. Beyond any religious redemption. Shooting this snake would be much too easy a way out for him. He should be publicly flogged and then hanged very slowly. And then left there to rot.
I see. So, if this Lake is not with the wagons come tomorrow, you will continue your pursuit of him?
Yes. If the law won't touch him, who does that leave?
I think this Lake person might have some connections in very high places. He would have to have some sort of protection in order to travel across two states with wagons filled with stolen children.
He will not be with the wagons tomorrow, nor will his compadre in crime. They are too smart to be trapped like this. But be careful of chasing them into San Diego. San Diego is no place for open gunfights. It is a very old town, more than 100 years. They have laws that are strictly enforced. That is probably why Lick has made the town his base.
He'll have to leave his hidey hole sooner or later.
But be aware that men such as Lake are like the rabbit, my friend. He will surely have more than one hole from which to run.
And there is always the sea. And the docks of San Diego are not a friendly place. I know. I've been there. It is a dangerous place, where many men have been knocked on the head and kidnapped, taken to sea as no more than slaves. More often than not, they are never heard of again.
Have either of you ever seen the ocean?
Bodine and Sam shook their heads.
You should. It will take your breath from you. Truly one of God's greatest creations.
But dangerous. Filled with huge fish that can swallow a man whole, and creatures with many arms that can crush a man.
Octopuses?
Octopi.
There's more than one of them, ain't they? Octopuses.
Sam rolled up in his blankets and went to sleep. Comandante Carrillo and his force moved into position several hours before daylight. As quietly as possible, he positioned his men on both sides of the ravine the wagons would be forced to use once they hit the blocked road. Then they waited in the cold hours before dawn. Once the children were in safe hands, Comandante Carrillo and his men would transport the girls back to Tecate and turn them over to the Catholic sisters at a local convent and school. The Mexican and American governments would then work out the politics of returning the kids to their families.
God help the kids waiting for those bumblebee-brained politicians on both sides of the border to act.
If we all dislike and distrust politicians so much, as we all seem to, why then do we have them?
I don't like rattlesnakes either, but we have them, no?
Are you equating a politician with a rattlesnake, Vasco?
Don't they both possess some of the same qualities?
No one among them could argue that. Bodine and Sam and Luis had agreed that they would not give the slavers a chance to surrender. Giving them even a split second's chance might endanger some of the girls. So the first volley was going to have to empty wagon seats and saddles. After that, if any wanted to surrender, they would be taken into Mexico for trial.
Are we in Mexico?
For all intents and purposes, yes.
And if they're found guilty?
They will be put to work in labor camps. There is only one way they will return to the United States. In a box.
At first light, the men heard the wagons coming. The soldiers hugged the ground as the scout left the old road and followed the ravine for a time. He rode through the wash and then back again, stopping right in front of Sam.
All right, we can get through here. Bring those wagons around. I want to get to San Diego and find me a hot tub and a hotter woman.
Half of the slavers were knocked out of saddles and off wagon boxes during the first volley. 10 of Luis's men were hidden near the mouth of the wash and at the open. They swung around and sealed the slavers in, all of the men being very careful to keep the lead out of the wagon beds. It was a roaring, shattering, and bloody 90 seconds. The only casualty among Carrillo's men was when a cartridge misfired and a soldier got a cut on the side of his face. It was a slaughter among the slavers. 12 survived the ambush, and 3 of those were so badly wounded they did not have long to live. 9 badly shaken and frightened slavers surrendered. Bodine and Sam walked down to the rocky wash floor and stared at the sullen outlaws, who stood with their hands in the air. Carrillo and a few of his men were seeing to the needs of the children.
Bodine!
In person. I told you boys back at the barroom to give it up.
What happens now?
You'll be taken to Mexico for trial.
Sam smiled thinly at the look on the men's faces at his words. Mexican justice was harsh.
But this ain't Mexico.
Really? I think you're lost is all.
Fuck you, Breed.
Lake and Porter, where are they?
Fuck yourself. Or maybe the Breed will bend over for you.
Bodine shrugged and walked away, joining Comandante Carrillo by a wagon.
The girls?
Bodine, the girls?
They have not been molested, as far as I can tell. Don't worry, Matt. The sisters will take good care of them, and they'll be reunited with their families just as quickly as possible. I will break this scum and find where the other girls are being held. I promise you that. I do not think they will hold up well to pain.
We'll ride now, Comandante. These men probably know where the girls are being held, but I doubt if they know the whereabouts of Lake and Porter.
Nor do I. Lake is a very cautious man. However, if I do learn something from these scum, where can you be reached?
I honestly don't know. We'll try San Diego first and hang around there for a few days. But I think once the news of this reaches Lake and Porter, they'll leave California and head for another spot.
That is my thought as well.
The Comandante smiled and stuck out his hand just as Sam walked up. He shook hands all the way around.
Vaya con Dios, amigos, and good hunting.
They rode into San Diego, 2 trail-weary and dusty men. In the few days since the wagon train was ambushed and the girls rescued, the news had spread like raging wildfire all over the nation, the story being headlined in every newspaper, and the telegraph wires were fairly humming with the rescue. It was still on the front page of the San Diego paper when the men walked into the hotel lobby, with Matt Bodine and Sam Two Wolves mentioned several times. And the law was hunting Lake and Porter. The desk clerk got so rattled when he saw who his guests were, he turned over the inkwell and dropped the room keys several times. They left suits to be cleaned and ironed and went to their rooms to wash up. Water was being heated for the tubs at the end of the hall. They set their boots out to be blacked. When the young men emerged, all decked out in suits and white shirts and string ties, the sheriff met them in the lobby. He was not wearing a very friendly expression on his tanned face. He pointed to the hotel restaurant.
We'll talk, boys. Some people are calling you boys heroes, and maybe you are, but to my mind, you're both trouble hunters. I'll not have it in this town. Lake and Porter were here, They pulled out when the news of the ambush hit the streets, and you two are going to pull out in the morning.
And if we don't?
I can put together 100 men in the time it takes you to pull on your boots. Look out that window, boys.
Matt and Sam could see at least 5 deputies spread out on their side of the street and on the boardwalk across the street. They were all carrying rifles.
What have we done to warrant this, Sheriff?
Nothing. But I'd do the same thing if I was looking at Bat Masterson, the Earp Boys, or any other gunslinger.
We've never hired our gun, Sheriff.
I believe that, too. But you got the reputation. Now listen to me, boys. I got 6 young would-be gun slicks in this town, just a lathering at the mouth for a try at either one of you. I'll not have no shooting on these streets. This is a respectable town, and getting more so every day, I intend to keep it that way.
Are we confined to this hotel?
No, I ain't got the right to do that. And I ain't got the right to tell you boys you can't wear your iron when you leave here for a drink or whatever. That'd be hanging a death sentence on the both of you. I just want you gone from here come first light, and I truly wish to hell you'd never have showed up.
He shoved back his chair and walked out of the hotel dining room.
I have taken a very sudden dislike for this town.
As have I, brother. We'll pull out before dawn and ride north up the coast. I intend to see the ocean, and no one is going to stop me from doing that.
They ate slowly, enjoying the food and the coffee, although the coffee was a tad on the weak side. They bought cigars and stepped outside to smoke them in the coolness of fading afternoon. The sheriff and 2 deputies sat across the street, watching them.
Isn't it wonderful to be the center of such attention?
I could do without it.
They smoked in silence for a few moments, both of them aware that a crowd was gathering across the street, and the sheriff had gotten out of his chair, a very worried look on his face.
Something's up. And I don't think it's the mayor to present us with a civic award.
Here it comes.
Bodine cut his eyes up the wide street. 3 young men in their early 20s, and all wearing 2 guns tied down low, were swaggering down the street.
Damn it.
You boys get on back home.
You just stand aside, Sheriff. This ain't none of your affair.
By God, I can make it my affair.
Then you're likely to get caught up in the crossfire. We're calling out Bodine and that half-breed.
Don't be fools, boys. We'll be burying you all come tomorrow.
They sneered at that and came swaggering on, their hands close to the butts of their guns.
Idiots.
Sam slipped the hammer thong from his Colt. Bodine had already done so.
Step out in the street, gunfighters.
We've got no grievance with any of you. There is no need for this.
What's the matter, gunfighter? Hey, you afraid of us?
You know better than that. But this doesn't make any sense. We've done you no harm.
I'm the Santa Ana Kid.
Good Lord, it would be tough trying to make a reputation.
Glad to meet you. How about a drink?
The trio stopped in the street.
No time for that. We'll have all the drinks in the world free after we kill you.
Bodine looked at the sheriff. The sheriff shrugged his shoulders.
You won't kill either of us, boy. Now go on home. Before hard words are said that you can't back away from.
Ha! I ain't never lost a gunfight in my life.
Have you ever had one?
Well, you damn right. I've had plenty of fights. I got 4 notches on my guns.
Yeah. How many notches you got, Bodine?
Boy, if Bodine notched his guns, he wouldn't have any grips left on him.
Well, shut up. You stay out of this. I got a right to call out a gunfighter.
Only a half-truth. The laws were changing in the West, but very slowly. The sheriff knew that if he tried to intervene, wild shots would be fired, and someone in the crowd was sure to get hit, for the crowd had swelled to several hundred, lining both sides of the wide street. The sheriff was caught between that rock and a hard place. He made up his mind. He would let the men settle it. He already knew what the outcome would be. He silently cursed the moment that Matt Bodine and Sam Two Wolves rode into town, all the while knowing that this was not their fault. They had provoked nothing, had caused no trouble.
I think they're both yeller.
Yeah, Red, it sure seems that way to me too. Ain't that the way you see it, Sandy? Yeller dogs!
The Santa Ana Kid, Red, and Sandy spread out in the street.
What's your problem? You greasy damn half-breed? You're like all Injuns, ain't you? Not only do you stink, but you're yellow.
Sam's dark eyes were flint hard, his face expressionless. Then the kid stepped into his coffin.
Come on, Bodine, Sam Yellow Coyote. You sons of bitches!
The sheriff knew it was over. No man could be expected to take that slur. Bodine and Sam brushed back their suit coats and stepped off the boardwalk. The crowd watched the men step down from the boardwalk and slowly walk to the center of the street, turning to face the three young would-be gun handlers.
There is still time for you to walk away. Retract that slur against our mothers and we'll call it even.
The sheriff nodded his head in approval. Bodine and Sam were giving the young men every opportunity to back away with some dignity. Much more so than other gun slicks he'd seen in his time.
Take the offer, boys. Take it and walk away, or tomorrow I'll be listening to your weeping mothers as we bury all three of you.
I think they're already afraid of us, boys. I tell you what, Bodine, you beg some, and we'll let you live.
Fools. Cocky fools.
Maybe the engine could do a war dance for us. That'd be fun to see, wouldn't it? Dance for us, Breed!
But Sam and Bodine had taken enough from these loudmouthed punks.
Shut your damn flapping mouths and make your play.
You ready, Bodine?
I've been ready, kid.
Then die, damn you!
The trio dragged iron. Bodine's hands were suddenly filled with roaring colts. His draw had been as lightning quick as a striking rattlesnake, and 10 times as deadly. Sam's right hand was filled almost as quickly, the colt roaring and bucking in his hand. The Santa Ana Kid was the first one down, 2 bullet holes in the center of his belly, several inches above his belt buckle, one just above the other. The kid was down in the street, his guns still in leather. Sandy was on his knees, both hands clutching his shattered belly from the twin 44 slugs from Sam's colt. Red was lying on his back in the dust. He had taken 2 44 slugs in his face, one going in at nose level, the other 2 inches above that, in the center of his forehead. His fancy guns lay beside his body, unfired. Bodine and Sam were punching out empties, reloading. Their faces were impassive. Several kids ran out into the street to snatch up the empty brass for souvenirs.
Oh, I'm shot! Oh, it hurts! It hurts!
Bodine holstered his guns.
Get him to a doctor and call the undertaker for Red.
Bodine and Sam wheeled about in the street and returned to the boardwalk in front of the hotel and sat down, relighting their cigars. The sheriff looked down as a piece of paper was pressed into his hand.
Telegram for Matt Bodine. It just came in. I missed the shooting because of the damn thing.
Deliver it.
You deliver it.
The sheriff walked across the wide street, past the still hollering Santa Ana Kid and the moaning Sandy. He glanced at the young man. Sandy, he guessed accurately, would be dead before morning. And so would the kid, he figured. Anytime a man goes up against the house, he's bucking bad odds.
This just came in for you, Bodine. For whatever it's worth, boys, you tried to talk them out of it. I'll give you both that much. But I still want you gone in the morning.
Bodine took the telegram without any comment and opened it.
Girls safe. Found them outside Tijuana. Morgan got away. Believe he joined Lake and Porter somewhere in Southern California. Good hunting. Luis de Carrillo.
Bodine handed the telegram to Sam.
We'll be gone at first light.
They rode out of San Diego before dawn, heading north. The sheriff was standing in front of his office, watching them leave. He lifted a hand in farewell, and the young men returned the salute. The sheriff walked back into his office. He had 3 funerals to attend that day. Sam and Bodine rode about 5 miles outside of town and found a creek. There they made camp and cooked breakfast. They would stay there for a couple of days, giving their horses the rest they had planned on giving them in San Diego. They both had put the gunfight out of their minds. They hadn't started it, so it wasn't their fault. In the West, if a boy strapped on a gun, he became a man. And that was that. When they left the camp, they rode for a day and then turned west, toward the ocean. When they came upon it, It was as Vasco had said it would be. The vastness and the seemingly endless beauty of it took their breaths away. They camped on the bluffs above the ocean, and for several days did nothing but relax and walk the lonely, windswept beaches, picking up and admiring shells they found along the way. But because of the monsters therein that Benito and Vasco had talked about, they did not go for a swim. They did taste the water and found it unpalatable. The constantly moving waters soothed them for a time, but then it began to bring out the restlessness in both of them. They packed up and pulled out, heading north, following the coastline. They both knew that Los Angeles had been taken by U.S. forces back in 1846, and they knew, too, that the wearing of guns was frowned upon in these rapidly changing times. Los Angeles was becoming a very modern city, with gas street lamps and indoor water closets, and a police force that walked their beats with billy clubs and would brook no nonsense from troublemakers.
Sounds like it's going to be just too damn civilized for me, brother. What do you think?
I think it might be a good place for us to visit and listen for the whereabouts of Morgan, Lake, and Porter. And you might be at last exposed to some civility. Lord knows your poor mother did her best to make you a gentleman. She used to tell me she wondered where she went wrong.
They were making ready for Christmas in Los Angeles, and while Sam's people had never celebrated it, Sam had spent many a Christmas day at the Bodine Ranch. The gayness of it all, here in Los Angeles, hundreds of miles from home country, laid a touch of sadness on the young men. But a couple of young ladies who came sashaying by, walking in that way that ladies do, drove the lonelies from the young men and made them realize how trail-weary and dusty they were. They hightailed out, looking for a fancy hotel and a shave, a bath, and a haircut, while they had their suits cleaned and pressed. The desk clerk at the fancy hotel looked at their dusty clothing and arched one eyebrow in distaste. His expression was that of a man who'd been chewing on a persimmon that wasn't ripe. He brightened up considerably when both Sam and Bodine pulled out pokes of gold coin and tried to pay for their rooms in advance. He waved that offer away.
We were wondering where the roughest part of town might be.
Sir, that would be the Calle de los Negros section. But no decent man, and certainly no decent woman, would ever go there.
Why not?
Sir, ladies of the evening and scoundrels and brigands and the like frequent the establishments there.
Sounds like just the place for us.
The desk clerk looked like a man about ready to keel over. All dutied up, neither Bodine nor Sam felt inclined to wear their guns in any way other than how they normally did. They checked the loads, strapped them on, tied them down, and stepped out into the late afternoon of Los Angeles.
I've never seen so many people in one place.
While you were taking a bath, wallowing about like a bear in a creek, and singing just about as well, I met several very nice people in the lobby. The population of the city is now close to 15,000.
That's ridiculous. That's more people than in all of Wyoming territory. What the hell do they do around here?
Business, Bodine. The haberdasher must buy groceries, just as the grocer must buy clothing.
Well, you've accounted for two people. What about the other 14,998?
You're impossible, Bodine. Sometimes I wonder if you've fallen off your horse one time too many.
Well, explain it then, Mr. Know-It-All.
It would take too long, and besides, trying to make you understand anything makes my head hurt.
At least I don't stand around in the rain looking up, wondering where it comes from.
The men pushed open the bat wings and stepped into the noisy and beery-smelling saloon. Some of the conversation stopped as unshaven and rough-appearing men watched them walk to the bar, all of them noting the open display of guns. Matt and Sam sipped at their mugs of beer, listening to the hubbub of conversation going on all around them. They left after a few minutes, deciding there was nothing being said that was of interest to them. A young boy tugged at Bodine's sleeve.
Got a message for you, mister.
Bodine looked down at the child.
Man, give me 50 cents to tell you this. Meet me in Chester's as quickly as possible.
Who is the man?
Bodine's silent warning bells were ringing in his head. If there ever was a setup, this was it. He exchanged glances with Sam and could see his brother was thinking the same thing.
I don't know. I've never seen him before.
What'd he look like?
Hard to tell. He was standing in the shadows, He was big, though. Bigger than you. And he talked like he was real educated. Talked like a school teacher.
Lake.
More than likely.
Bodine gave the boy a dollar and a smile.
Where and what is it, Chester?
It's a bad place to go. A real rough bar about a block and a half from here. It's in an alley, there.
He pointed the way.
You gotta be careful down there. There's ladies that'll mickey up your drink and rob you. Men who'll kill you for what's in your pockets. Men who'll pick a fight with you just because they like to hurt people.
Did you see which way this man went after he spoke with you?
Sure did. He went back into the bar.
Sam smiled and gave the boy another dollar.
It's almost dark, boy. You better get off the streets and go home.
The streets is my home, mister. You two be careful. That man had friends in Chester's. They'll be laying for you. See ya!
He ran off into the dusk. Sam jerked a thumb in the direction of the infamous bar.
Shall we?
Why not?
The two of them slipped the hammer thongs from their colts and walked up the street. They turned off the street and stepped into the gloom of an alley. A man was lying next to a wall, in the dirt, face down. He might have been drunk, he might have been dead. They did not stop to investigate. A drunk staggered out of Chester's and slammed into the wall across the alley. He sat down hard. He reeked of cheap whiskey and vomit.
This place certainly caters to a lovely clientele.
Shall we improve the joint's image?
Oh, by all means. Things have been so dull lately.
The place didn't have a door, just the hinges. It had probably been ripped off years back and never replaced. The patrons of the joint were some of the sorriest-looking men and women either man had ever seen. The stench of booze and sweat and cheap perfume hung in the air. Bodine and Sam walked to the bar. Neither of them had any desire whatsoever to drink anything served up in this bar. Bodine faced the loutish-looking barkeep, and Sam turned to face the men in the murky room.
Well now, ain't we the fine-looking gentlemen? Real gentry come to pay us a visit. And what might your name be? Percival?
Matt Bodine. This is my brother, Sam Two Wolves.
The barkeep's eyes narrowed.
What'll it be, boys?
Someone wanted to see me, so here I am.
A man stepped into the room, using a rear door. He was tall and broad-shouldered. He would have been handsome had it not been for his drooping eye, which gave him a sinister look. He was clean-shaven and smelling of expensive men's cologne, and neatly dressed in a dark suit, white shirt, and black tie. His boots were polished to a high sheen. He held his coat wide, showing Bodine he was not armed, at least so far as Matt could see.
We finally meet, Mr. Bodine, Mr. Two Wolves.
You'd be Lake.
That is correct. I am not armed, Mr. Bodine, and I will submit to a search if you feel it necessary.
No, I'll take your word. You're not armed, but 50 others in this room are. And you could and probably have bought this scum for a dollar a head.
Several of the men in the room stirred at that slur, but none of them made a move toward the guns they were openly wearing.
You're a plain-spoken man, Mr. Bodine. But yes, you are quite correct in your assumption.
That they're scum or that you bought them off?
Lake smiled, showing very white teeth.
I'll keep you guessing about that.
The first man who drags iron and I kill you, Lake.
Yes, I imagine you would.
So what do we do now?
Have either of you had dinner?
No, we haven't.
My treat, then. I know a charming place just a few blocks from here. And since we'll be meeting as equals, do you have any objections to my retrieving my guns?
None at all. We'll meet you out front.
That is quite a disgusting place back there. But there are many disgusting people in this world, and they have to have a place to congregate. Is that not correct, Bodine?
I suppose.
You two have very nearly wrecked my little empire. It was quite profitable for a time.
And you have the nerve to speak of disgusting?
Don't be so naive, Sam. I took those children from a life of dreary farm work and tedious drudgery and offered them security.
I suppose the sad thing is you really believe that, don't you?
But of course. What else is a woman good for? I just started the girls doing what they do best a bit earlier, that's all.
Lake pointed.
Right over there. A wonderful restaurant. You'll both enjoy it, I assure you.
No, we won't. because we're not eating there.
You think I would have you poisoned? You really don't trust me, do you, Bodine?
Bodine stopped at the edge of the street and faced the man.
I really don't, Lake. Sam and I prefer to eat alone, Lake. State your business with us or drag iron makes no difference to me.
I think it does, Bodine. I think you really want to kill me. And you might be good enough to do it. But I don't think so.
Oh, I'm going to kill you, Lake. You and Porter and Morgan, too, if I can.
Let's repair to a more private place, shall we?
Lake motioned them across the street to a small park. He sat down, and the others followed suit.
Why do you want to kill us, Bodine?
Here we go again. I have this memorized, you know.
Because I made a promise, that's why.
To Dick Wellman?
Yes.
But Jenny is safe.
That's more than you can say for her parents. You killed them.
Ah, quite the contrary, Bodine. I did nothing of the sort. Chapo and his savages did that. And you killed Chapo, so it's even.
Bodine stood up.
The next time we meet, Lake, you best have your hand wrapped around the butt of a colt.
You'll never make it out of this city alive, Bodine. Neither you nor that breed with you.
We're both light sleepers.
Are you back shooters?
Lake stood up.
No. We'll leave things like that to scum like you.
Lake flushed and turned his back to the men, swiftly walking out of the park.
Now what was all that about? The dinner invitation and so forth.
I don't know. Maybe he really thought he could talk us out of following him. Maybe the food was poisoned. I guess we'll never know.
It was that time of day when traffic, carriage and pedestrian, was the slowest. Most were already home getting ready for dinner, and it was still too early for the night crawlers to be out. The park was deserted. The thugs came at them in a rush, waving clubs and leather-wrapped head knockers, but no guns. Bodine and Sam immediately shifted locations, splitting up, each giving the other ample fighting room. Sam flung himself to the ground and rolled fast, slamming his body against the ankles and knees of several rowdies, knocking them sprawling, just as Bodine gave one a knuckle sandwich to the teeth and drove his stiffened left fingers into the throat of another. Sam jumped to his boots and kicked one assailant in the face, the toe of the boot smashing the man's nose flat against his face. Bodine jerked the club away from one and laid it on the man's skull bone. The man staggered and went down, blood streaming from his torn scalp. Sam applied some Indian wrestling to another and tossed the man over his shoulder. He landed heavily in the bushes and struggled to get free. Bodine stood toe-to-toe with the hoodlum and smashed the man's face with hard left and right combinations. The man went down and Bodine kneed him in the face. Those few thugs able to do so jumped up and ran away into the night. The others lay on the ground, bleeding. The cops took one look at the tailored suits of Sam and Bodine and the rough dress of the moaning men and began pulling out handcuffs.
What happened, sir?
We were walking through the park discussing where to have dinner when these hooligans set upon us.
Matt pointed to the clubs on the ground.
With those?
Disgraceful! How many were there?
Oh, 6 or 8 of them, I suppose. We thrashed them properly.
You certainly did that, sir. May I have your names, gentlemen, for the report, nothing more.
He took out a notebook and a pencil.
I'm Sam Two Wolves.
The cop broke off the point of his pencil.
And this is Matt Bodine.
The cop broke the pencil. The cop knelt down beside one handcuffed and bleeding man.
You're lucky to be alive, lad.
Bodine and Sam had packed their suits and dressed in jeans and checkered shirts, bandanas tied around their necks. They wore their guns openly and had not been challenged for doing so, but they had received some odd looks and some inviting ones from young ladies.
It's a shame I had to have been born so handsome.
She's probably blind, or else she felt sorry for you and did it out of sympathy. Even ugly people like you need some sort of affection every now and then.
The Blood Brothers returned to the low-life bar known as Chester's. Bodine jerked the barkeep, it was the same one from the night before, over the bar and slapped him across the face, twice.
Do I have your attention now?
Yeah, yes, sir.
Lake, where is he?
Gone, Bodine. Him and his gang pulled out late last night after you and the breed whooped them men in the park.
Gone where?
I swear to the Blessed Virgin, I don't know, and I ain't got no reason to lie, Bodine. Lake said he wouldn't be back no more. He was pulling out for good.
Why would he do that?
To get away from you. He said you was a jinx on him. I swear I don't know where he went.
Who would know?
His gal friend. She lives across the street, and she was sure cussing and squalling at him when he rode out in the middle of the night.
What's her name?
Sadie. First door to the right at the top of the stairs.
Sadie plopped down on the bed.
Why you want to know where he went?
So I can find him and kill him.
You're Bodine, ain't you?
That's right.
He's skittish of you, all right. Says you got a hoodoo on him. What the hell? He's gone for good, and I'll never see him again. What do I owe to no good? He's gone to San Francisco.
Porter and Morgan?
Morgan's at sea. He'll meet Lake there. Porter went with Lake.
How many men?
What's it worth to you?
Bodine dug in a vest pocket and tossed a double eagle on the bed. Sadie grabbed it up fast.
20 men, all good with a gun.
Names?
Don Bradley, Bob Doyle, Mayvern, Hogg. They ain't none of them pushovers.
Going back into slaving?
Probably. Or certainly something just as awful.
If you feel that way, why did you stay with him?
He paid the rent.
You check us out of the hotel. I'll be saddling up.
All right. We need supplies.
We'll get them on the edge of town.
Bodine held out his hand. Sam looked at it.
What do you want now?
The money for your room.
Sam forked over some coins. It wasn't until Bodine was checking out that he realized Sam had given him Mexican pesos. After only 2 days on the trail, it became apparent to Bodine and Sam that tracking Lake and his gang was going to be easy. For whatever reason, the outlaws appeared to be throwing caution to the wind. They were robbing and raping their way north, subjecting those in their path to the sight of terror and the wanton destruction of property. The gang had grown, nearly tripling in size, as punks and thugs and local ne'er-do-wells rushed to join the marauders as they passed through the country.
The only thing I can figure out is he's building a stake from the raids and will link up with Morgan in San Francisco and take to the seas.
To go where?
Who knows? South America, maybe. Perhaps some island thousands of miles away where he and those who choose to go with him can take over and live like kings. It's happened before.
Then it's a race against time. If they get to San Francisco in the docks before we do, we've lost the race.
If he is heading for that city, he might have told that to Sadie just to throw us off, knowing she was sure to tell us. Right now, Lake is heading straight north. If he starts cutting to the west, we'll know that Morgan is put in somewhere along the coast and is waiting for him.
Lake and his outlaw band did not choose the easier and more populated route to the north. They chose the inland passage north, where the pickings might be somewhat less, but the law was fewer in numbers and more widely scattered. After leaving the city, Lake headed straight north, through the Los Padres, between the Tehachapi Mountains to the east and the Sierra Madres to the west. He was heading for a sparsely populated area, mostly cattle country, with some mining, which was dotted with tiny towns with little or no law which would interfere with his plans. As they rode, Lake and his men were leaving in their wake pillaged towns, many set blazing, and shattered lives and the bodies of any who dared to try to stop them. The outlaws were taking everything and anything of value. Rings, jewelry, watches, and money. Just south of the Kettleman Hills, Bodine and Sam came up on a familiar and sickening scene, one they had witnessed several times since leaving Los Angeles. A burned-out ranch with buzzards waddling about in the yard, too bloated to fly after feasting on the dead bodies in the yard. Wetting bandanas and tying them around their faces to help block out some of the stench of death, the young men found shovels and began digging shallow graves for the dead, which included several young people.
Lake has gone insane. These men have been tortured. There's no reason behind anything like this.
Neither man commented on the obvious fact that the women had been sexually abused.
He's gone crazy, all right.
Their work was interrupted by men on horses, riding hard from the southeast. The posse circled them in a swirl of dust. The men were trail dusty and hard-faced, riding with rifles across the saddle horns, about 20 of them.
State your business and your names, and you best be damn quick in doing it.
Bodine tossed his shovel to the ground, ire welling up in him. Nothing like what they had seen riding north from Los Angeles would have been permitted to happen in Wyoming. No truly western town could have been treed by scum like Lake and his men. It was apparent to Bodine that while California was much more progressive and modern than anything he had ever seen before, some of the aggressiveness had gone from its citizens. They had let their guard down. Many of its people had taken off their guns and were living, past tense for many of them in the path of Lake, under a false sense of security. Bodine faced the leader of the posse, a portly man with a flushed face and a belly that hung over his belt.
You best watch your mouth with me, mister. Use your eyes for a change. This happened a good day ago, maybe 2 days back. If we'd had anything to do with it, we damn sure wouldn't be hanging around burying the bodies. Now why don't you get your fat butt out of the saddle and find a shovel before I jerk you out of the saddle and slap the piss out of you?
You can't talk to me like that, you saddle bum! Just who in the hell do you think you are?
Matt Bodine.
The fight went out of the man. He sat back in the saddle, breathing heavily, but keeping his mouth closed.
We've been riding hard for 2 days, Mr. Bodine. The outlaws hit just southwest of Bakersfield. 4 ranches and 1 little town. It was awful. It just seems like they're killing for no reason.
Oh, they have a reason. It's called greed, ignorance, stupidity, viciousness, and contempt for the law. We've learned that Lake's home base has been Los Angeles off and on for several years. Why in the hell didn't you people hang him years back?
Well, we like to think of ourselves as more civilized than that, sir. You'd be Sam Two Wolves?
That is correct.
We'll help you bury the dead and we'll rest for a time. Give our horses a chance to blow. Then we'll be off to catch Lake.
What are you going to do when you catch him? Ask him to surrender?
Of course.
Then we'll be burying you somewhere up along the trail. Lake's got about 60 hard cases riding with him. You've all seen what they're capable of doing. Circle around and come in from the north. Lay out an ambush and blow them out of the saddle.
That would not be a lawful act. There may be those in the group who are along for the lark, who are taking no active part in this terror. Young people seeking thrills. They deserve a trial and to be punished, certainly. But doing what you suggest would be to lower ourselves to the level of those we pursue.
Bodine and Sam exchanged glances.